Infamous Indy presents The Digging Up Dillinger Project, featuring the Texas Crime Travelers and Travis Thompson. I'm your host, Joe Malillo. In the annals of American crime, few figures loom as large as John Dillinger. A mastermind of bank heists, his name became synonymous with brazen robberies and daring escapes. Questions of whether he escaped an FBI ambush and the whereabouts of his buried loot persevere. History offers one account, but there are whispers that tell us many more. Join us as we go digging up Dillinger. Welcome to another episode of Digging Up Dillinger. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you made it to episode 15, bravo. You're one of few. I've had some friends of mine say that they've listened every week. So we do have people that are super fans, and we couldn't be more excited. And if you're just joining us and this is the first episode, awesome. Come along.
Yes.
Dig with us.
Yes.
There's a lot to do. Malillo, Stuart Fillmore, Todd Hiles, and of course, Travis Thompson. Travis is the great nephew of John Dillinger, retired FBI agent, Stuart Fillmore, and retired Secret Service agent Todd Hiles, the Texas crime travelers. Guys, thanks for joining for another episode. This is great.
Yes.
We obviously
absolutely.
Yes.
We do. This is fun for us. We love doing this.
Stuart just likes it because it gives him an excuse to drink again. He drinks. he has like an episode. Every episode, he's got a drink of some sort. And today it's tequila.
Well, so I actually went the county that I live in. You can go to the grocery store and you can buy wine and beer, but you cannot buy liquor. So I have to go to the next county to buy liquor. So I made a run to the liquor store today, and I bought a couple of those little airplane size bottles of tequila just because, hey, this might be something I like, but I don't want to, you know, spend, you know, $60 to find out, hey, I don't like this. So I bought a couple of little samplers, and so this is one of them. And it's a tequila.
Looks like more than one. It's like at least two nips there.
So you went
across county lines to go get it.
Some bootlegger. Might call that bootlegging, I'm not selling it. I'm not selling it. Now, if I were selling it, it would be bootlegging. But this is strictly for my own consumption.
Great. We definitely know it's for his own consumption.
He can't drink on the tennis court, so he just drinks at night.
Yeah,
exactly. That's right. Well said, Todd.
His forearm gets a little faded when he can't when he can't aim straight. If you guys know us at this point, we're doing a lot of research. We're trying to dig into this a little bit more. It's interesting. I was also thinking we've done the research over the last however so many years, but when it's like we almost have to rediscover the research to be able to bring it back and also share it with our listeners. So last episode, really loved it. I thought that was a great one. We have some more research we're going to go over. So if you guys enjoy kind of this discussion, please stick around. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah.
You went over county lines. I went over state lines. I didn't steal a car and go from Indiana to Chicago.
Okay.
But I did drive to Chicago to the University of Chicago's library, where in their special research section, they have the papers from Ron Offen. Ron Offen was a 1930s. He was born in the 1930s, and I take that back. He was an author all throughout the 1930s, but he helped co-author the book Dillinger, Dead or Alive. And if we do the research, we had a couple people reach out to us, including Anthony V, who told us, hey, go look at those papers at the Chicago Library. So, of course, I did. And you guys kind of, Stuart, I called you. I called Travis, obviously, on the way up there. I called you to try to say, like, hey, what am I doing? Don't worry. Stuart was drinking on the beach, not just in his office.
that is true.
Two cheeks to the wind. And this guy gives me the perfect answer. He's like, he goes, I don't know. I'm on the beach right now, but you should look. You should look for Jimmy Lawrence. And I was like, oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah. In my mind, when I went to the Chicago Library, in the archives online, you have to, at the Chicago Library, you have to literally reserve, create a login, reserve, put your driver's license number, reserve a time, reserve a slot, reserve a table. It was a, the most complicated process I've ever seen for a library for me to go get it. I get it at special research, and it's one of a kind stuff, but man, was it difficult. And then they didn't have the research when I got there. Eventually they had to go back down and go get it because apparently I didn't do it fast enough in time. Like I needed to do it at least 48 hours ahead, but shout out to that crew because they did a good job getting me the papers. So I kind of just wanted to go over the story with you. I have some of the research I'm going to show you guys so we can all look together, kind of get your feelings on what it is. Yep. I'm going to give you my quick recap on my opinion about what I thought I saw when I was there and kind of go over that. Is that okay?
We Absolutely, do it man. I want to hear this. Yes, this is great.
Okay. And these are the research papers that he donated to the school.
That's right. That's right. I actually met the lady who was in charge, or one of the team members from the library who was tasked with getting the papers from his widow, and she was the one who actually gave them up. And it took a couple of years. I mean, just like any other sale, right?
Wow.
He was known as he was a poet too. He was more known just because he did this Dillinger thing, his book, you know, Dillinger Dead or Alive, with Robert J. Nash.
Yeah, it's J. Robert Nash.
Yeah. Just because
what year
he did
was that? 1970, okay. I think. Yeah.
So just because he did that didn't mean he was an author outside of the Dillinger stuff. And he has hundreds of thousands of pieces of paper and research that the library had. So reserved it. Drove up there, had a 1 o'clock. Of course, they had lunch that was 2 hours long, so I had to pick between 11 and 1. I could have been there. I could have spent more time, but I didn't have time. I got there around 1. They had to go down and get the box, and it turned out it was only one of these kind of file folder boxes. They pulled it up. I had a nice reserved seat. I had a camera holder that they provided for me, and I sat there, and I opened it up, and I prayed, and I just said, please show me something. Lord, please, if there's something in here, please allow it, because it was pretty daunting. There were not 7 folders in the one box. There was actually another box, a third, like they call it box 3 and box 4. That's how they cataloged it. And in box 3 was 1 folder, and it happened to be in box 4. It seemed that somebody didn't put it back in the right direction. So I actually had all the folders in one box right in front of me, sitting in front of me in about an hour to look through it all. Okay. And I went back into my old reporter days and I was like, all right, let's just start rolling. Let's just start leafing. And so I pull out folder 1, folder 2, and I just kind of go back and back and back, and I just try to see it. They are labeled slightly. A lot of it were articles and documents and receipts. So what I saw in the first couple of folders were not research, not stuff that we would be like, oh my gosh, this is a piece from the FBI file that he got handed. This is a picture that was handed. It was nothing that bad. It was mostly communications between J. Robert Nash and him about the book, about their stuff. It was mostly 1970s, 70s to the 90s range years of documents. And I say this on TikTok, it felt as if it was something that was you would keep in your records so that you could go to court one day if you ever had to prove anything about this book and this deal that he did. Receipts, contract receipts, multiple contract copies, and then obviously the communications between Nash and himself about the book. That was in the front. Those were in the front couple that I saw. Once you got towards the back, we started seeing, once the book was published, a lot of these articles. He saved almost all his articles, including a National Enquirer, like a full National Enquirer paper or magazine. And it had literally the front page was, did Dillinger die? Question mark.
Awesome.
That was really cool. Something you guys should know if you're doing research, you know, this is the listeners and viewers and you guys as well. You know, don't, apparently you're not supposed to pick up the newspapers and read them like a newspaper. You know, you're supposed to leave them flat on the table. And I got called out at like once or twice, you know, and I looked too excited to be in a special research projects library. Like everybody was like, who's this guy? Like everybody else is doing hard work and I'm over here getting excited about receipts. I did take a bunch of pictures. I did snap some things. Again, 1 hour, 45 minutes. I was just kind of like, just kind of trying to browse, read, browse, see if there's any nuggets. I found a couple of things that I'm going to show you. But in the end, I think overall, it wasn't what I was expecting, where I was hoping there would be pieces of evidence that he used to write the book.
Which
we didn't have. Stuart, did you expect that? When I went there,
I tell you, you know, I'll go back a second. You know, a few years ago, I actually corresponded with J. Robert Nash after we had found the Dillinger map at the Dillinger farm. And I was trying to figure out what, you know, if there were any leads as to what this thing might be. And I read that book back when I was a kid, actually. So I had known about it for years. And Nash himself had written some other true crime books that I'd read. And, you know, so for me, it was actually pretty cool to reach out and talk to the guy. You know, this is something, too, that we might want to put on our list of leads to cover. Because I think Mr. Nash passed away last year or so, just fairly
earlier
recently.
What
he told me was, is, you know, he was intrigued by the map, and you know, I asked him if he had any, you know, in doing the research for his book, if he had any, you know, any documents, anything that he came across that, you know, indicated using codes, you know, on maps or anything like that. And, you know, he said he didn't. And he said, honestly, he said, I don't remember what all I had. He said, all that is in a storage bin somewhere. So, you know, so Nash's papers are still out there too, of his research on the book. But as far as Joe, what I would expect him to have, you know, having, you know, I've written a book myself, and I know that like a lot of my notes and stuff probably wouldn't make sense to somebody that's, you know, going back over it either. So I'm not sure if there's anything, you know, that specifically there is to look for. I think it's probably unique to each writer. You're just hoping to find some nugget in there.
Hey Travis, did they ever reach out to your dad and talk to your dad about that book?
No one that I'm aware of reached out to the family. My immediate family. So
obviously a little bit different, right? When we're talking when the book was published and the research is being done, but you're right. Yeah. Well, that's a good thought. We should maybe ask Mike to see if he's ever.
Yeah. I mean, there's a strong chance because during the 70s, my grandmother was reached out by a lot of people. You know, yeah,
and one thing too, Joe, in this may be something that you're going to put up and we're going to look at, but I tell you, in the discussions that I had with Nash, and I'd say we probably had, I don't know, 8 to 10 phone calls, you know, about just a lot. Some of it was just BS on just Dillinger, just talking the Dillinger case. But I the impression I got from him was that you know, the Dillinger dead or alive was his project. It was his baby. In fact, I don't remember him once ever mentioning Ron Offen. Because
that's crazy.
Yeah, because there were a couple of years after that, he wrote another book. Nash himself wrote a book without a co-author that was very, very similar. It was basically the same material. He didn't have a co-author. So I don't know if there was some kind of rift between the two. Knowing Nash's personality, I'm not surprised that there was actually some kind of a rift, because he was at the time, he was pretty old, but he was still very, very sharp. And he was very protective of this notion that, you know, that Dillinger might have gotten away. It might have been an imposter. He saw that as his own idea that and that anybody else, you know, intruding on it was, you know, an outsider, an intruder. So, you know, but yeah, he never once mentioned Ron Offen at all.
Did he ever mention anything about the FBI?
Oh yeah, he did. And in fact, that's one thing that's interesting that I would like to see in the correspondence between he and Offen, because Nash told me that he had been reached out by the FBI, and, you know, he was kind of cryptic about it. He said, you know, and J. Edgar Hoover was still alive at that time, you know, and he said, you know, Hoover did not want me writing this book. You know, I had agents call and make these kind of, you know, threats. And again, he was somewhat cryptic about exactly what it was, but without a doubt, he said he had been contacted by the FBI and that, you know, they didn't want this thing coming out. And I think it trends with what we're kind of running into, but I think it was more along the lines of that, like maybe his, you know, they maybe kind of threatened his reputation, or, you know, that, you know, I don't know if there was some dirt on him or whatever. We know that's how Hoover operated. He, you know, he held dirt on everybody in the world. And if they didn't fall in line, you know, that was kind of the MO.
There's some communications between Nash and Nash and Offen, and they aren't friendly. They're at least some of that's the vibe I got from the quick read. Yeah. Yeah. So I probably covered like 200 to 300 pieces of paper, right? Leaf through it of all different types. And I felt like I was a reporter again too, looking through, but that's the feeling I got from the back and forth, which makes sense on why Offen would keep kind of like the correspondence as backup in case Nash ever said, no, I didn't. I want full rights. Now, to that point, this is a good transition because I'm going to show you guys the first of a couple of the things that I got here, a couple of the pieces, the documents I took pictures of. So let me know once you guys, okay, I think we got it. Oh man, this is not as good as I thought, but well, there we go. That's a little
there
better.
There you go. Oh, yep. Awesome. Okay.
All right. So this, hold on. We're going to get it here. We're going to get it. Oh my God. Okay. Wanted, dead or alive. It's like zooming out. Chapter one, Dark Arrival. The Morgue, July 22nd, 1934. The Morgue, July 23rd, 1934. The Inquest, July 23rd, 19. These are chapters, or it looks as if this is the title page or the chapter pages for his book. At least this is the first draft, or at least it looks that way, first or second draft. And I wanted to show you guys first this because it puts it in order for everything. But if I had to pick a couple of things to go back for, one thing to go back for, it would be to be able to go through the manuscript of the first draft.
Yes.
Because that was, I'm telling you right now, one of the whole folders was nothing but the manuscript. And it was typed out. It was typewritten. And then it had, as you can see here in red ink, it had notes and edits and things that we would be put in the mind of the author as they're writing, which exactly. Is just go. It could be a source of clues for us. Could be some
note
that he wrote in the thing. So I took a picture of it to bring it to you guys. I have a couple of more shots of, you know, the couple of the notes that he made and a couple of different pages and different parts of the book. But I leafed through it quick, and then I did end up stopping right on the chapter where he talks about his death and getting shot and the morgue. And there were some notes in there. I couldn't read everything, but I did see some stuff that I think will lead to more clues. So if we have to go back, I'm going to go back and I want to spend at least a couple of hours just on the manuscript and knock that out and see if there's any clues and bring that back here. But in the meantime, you could see here, right? Like Nash is writing chapter one. Nash is, because there's an N next to it. Chapter two, Nights to Remember. Often O is writing chapter three, The Pushover, Melvin Purvis, Hoover Inc., J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, The Hoosiers, which is Matt Leash. And then can you guys read that? Something, East Chicago Police and Martin Zarkovich.
Zarkovich,
Yep. Chapter 4 is The Ladies, which is the women in the red, pink, and orange, Anna Sage, True Love, Frechette, Disappearing Doll, Polly Hamilton, and Forever Faithful, Audrey Dillinger Hancock. So, and then there's picks 4, it says at the bottom. It's just an example of what the authors were doing, what Often was doing here.
I'm kind of curious if while they're doing this, they tried to interview anyone from Crown Hill to see if it, like if there's anyone alive still that was part of the burial.
Yeah. We almost need to read the book again. I think maybe if we got the book and read it, I think we might have it. It might give us some more clues too.
Yeah, I read the book in 2018. Again, you know, again at that time, that my purpose was leads on the map to try to figure out what the map might have been. I actually have the book. I have Nash's solo effort. So I'll dig back into those as well.
Oh, you're digging? Cool. Okay. So look at this page. This is the pushover, and from the chapter page, you could see that the pushover is Melvin Purvis.
Yeah.
Seems to be a theme for us right now. It was Melvin. You could see, you know, when it came to making the identification of the man who murdered, as he occasionally casually walked out of the Biograph with Anna Sage and Polly Hamilton, Neil, the FBI, the East Chicago Police, in fact, all the various law enforcement agencies that were after Dillinger's blood. You could see the notes that Often is making here, you know, and they're quick edits. This is a great insight into writing a book, right? You don't just do it, but he changed murder to killed. There's another note at the bottom, you know, he changed her to on the official record or for the official record to on the official record, capitalization, grammar mistakes and stuff like that. So I don't see anything specific here. Do you guys? I mean, I just thought it was interesting to kind of give an example.
Yeah.
You know, I remember actually in one of the conversations I had with Nash, I actually was curious because, you know, again, I'll plug my own book. I have a book out there. It's called Tenahaw, Corruption in Small Town Texas. So actually having done it myself with modern, you know, computers and a word program, you know, where you can make those edits fairly easily. I was curious and I asked him about how, you know, man, back in those days, man, it must have been really hard to, you know, to write a book and type all that stuff out. And then when you had to make changes, that was just, you know, man, that you know, and so we talked about that. I remember having a conversation. So it's really cool to see, you know, kind of that process as it how they did it.
Physical labor. I mean, literally the labor of like typing it out.
Yeah.
And then if you screw up the page, you got to start the page over. Oh my gosh. Anyway, we take technology for granted is the theme here. Here's another chapter page. Here's another note page. You know, section chapter 3, section 1. I don't see anything here. I was just leafing it through and shooting quick, right? Just throwing them under my camera and getting it on. But to leaf through it and to figure out specifically, hey, this manuscript, I think we need to go back for the manuscript. And I think, Stuart, you need to come and visit.
I agree. Yeah, that's actually on our agenda. Todd and I, we're gonna be coming up. We have several things planned to do when we're up there. And so, I'd love to do that.
Well, here's another. This one's great.
Joe, can I throw in a quick story about the Chicago Public Library that's completely off topic, but some of our listeners might enjoy.
So you're asking me, or are you just telling me you're going to do this?
Well, I think I'm just telling you I'm going to do it.
Okay, go.
So when I was in,
I give you permission.
When I was with the FBI in Chicago, I was actually at an offsite office, and the main garage where we parked our bureau cars was a few blocks away from my offsite office. but it was actually closer to the main office, which was on Dearborn Street. And I forget the exact street that the Chicago Public Library is on downtown, but it's not far from the FBI office. It used to be at 219 South Dearborn. And the garage was just a few blocks down from the main office there. But where my satellite office was to get to the parking garage, it was kind of a long walk. And so I had found a couple of shortcuts to worm my way over to the parking garage. And it was not far from where the library was. But anyway, one day I was walking on this street that on my shortcut, and that's, you know, off the beaten path for where maybe tourists would be, you know, in this whole area is called the Chicago in the Loop in Chicago. And I passed this lady on the street that I said, my God, that woman looks just like Alice from the Brady Bunch, you know, but here was my thought process. I thought, what the hell would Alice be doing right here on this random street? You know,
I mean, the maid, Alice, the maid.
Yeah. Alice, the maid, you know? And then the next day I saw in the paper, you know, we're still reading newspapers at that time, but I saw in the paper that her name was Ann B. Davis, the actress. And Ann B. Davis was in Chicago for some kind of play or something. And, you know, so I guess she was just tooling around Chicago, and she wandered onto this street that really went nowhere. It was, like I said, it was just a shortcut for me to get to the parking garage. So, but anyway, that's just steps from where the Chicago Public Library is. So when you were talking about going there, it just triggered that memory in my crazy head.
Well, I love your Alice story, but I went to the University of Chicago's library.
Ah, okay.
So right. Not, well, the public.
I'm sorry.
He has a story about when he went to that university there and played.
I do have some cool stories about being on surveillance near the University of Chicago
playing hacky sack. Tell him.
No, we weren't playing. No, we were just trying to stay alive because there's some areas near the University of Chicago that a little questionable.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe, you probably saw that, Joe.
Yeah, no, I. Hey, listen, I used to live in Bushwick, Brooklyn, where, you know, literally, you know, bars are on the window, and I would sell real estate to people with bars. Like, literally, they're selling real estate. So here's the deal: you keep your windows rolled up, you keep your eyes forward. Listen, you're not causing any problems. Just driving through. Just everybody's got to get around. Don't cause any problems. Shouldn't be a problem, right?
All right.
Stay ready because you ain't got to get ready.
You can edit out the whole Alice story if you want to, but
no, anyway, I think we're going to leave it in just for pure fact. From now on, when you ask me to tell a story, I'm going to tell you no next time.
Yeah. You should. When he said something about Brady Bunch, you should just stop. Like,
oh my gosh! No, it's okay.
That was his favorite show growing up.
I don't give a shit. I really don't care. I think our viewers will like it because they love you, Stuart. All right, back to the research. United States Senate, the Committee on Banking and Currency, literally a letter written to Ron Offen and J. Robert Nash. At this point, they were at 794 Pleasant Avenue in Highland Park, Illinois. So I think that was interesting. And hold on, the letter is here, and it's signed Charles H. Percy, United States Senator. So in the letter, it says, you know, dear Misters Offen and Nash, thank you for your letter. I regret my delay in responding but recent floor action coupled with over 100,000 letters in this past 2 months have kept me from answering as quickly as I would like. I appreciated being among the recipients for your book, Dillinger, Dead or Alive. I've taken time to look through it and find it to be both interesting and thought-provoking. I have directed it to members of my staff for their attention as well. Again, I appreciate your directing this to my attention. Sincerely, Charles H. Percy. So, you know, Committee on Banking and Currency, Senator, United States Senator, got a book. Hey, great publicity, smart move by Nash and Offen to send this to the senator. I guess, what would you guys think the goal of this, you know, of them sending the book set to people like this in 1978?
My thought maybe that, you know, maybe they were trying to get, an official investigation into this, you know, hey, we found this, you know, we're private citizens. We can only do so much. Hey, you as the United States Senate, why don't you take the next step?
Legitimate step to take. It means that they really felt like this is something that needs to be investigated.
Yeah. Oh no, I can tell you from the conversations I had with Nash, he believed in this, you know, even up to 2018, which is when I was talking with him. So he was still very much that Dillinger had gotten away.
We got you, Nash. We got your back, dude. We're here. He's an honorary member of the New Age Dillinger gang. What about this one, guys? CBS, Division of Columbia Entertainment from New York. This looks like, I guess there's no signature page, but gentlemen, you have told us that you have exclusive information based on 2 years of research, which leads you to conclude that John H. Dillinger, the outlaw who's supposedly killed by the FBI in 1934, is alive. As we told you, this is the first indication that we have had of that possibility. You wish to disclose this information to us promptly so that if we are interested in it, we can try to negotiate an arrangement under which we will acquire exclusive television, radio, and direct projection non-theatrical rights with respect to it and anything that develops from it. But you are not willing to disclose this information to us unless we agree that we will not, one, use the basis of the independent investigation by us, or two, make any public use of the information received from you unless and until we conclude an agreement and the story of the silent of any salient portions of it become public knowledge or are available to us someday other than you. I'm just reading this letter from CBS and it sounds like they wanted to negotiate a deal.
Yes.
So again, 54 years later, we're trying to negotiate with media companies. I thought that was so funny. It's like, oh, here's this CBS letter.
It really is. I mean, the mainstream media has effectively avoided this story now. Oh, yeah. And Joe, you had passed along the letter about the senator. So, but I had not, you know, you didn't mention this letter from CBS. So this is the first time I'm seeing this, and I'm telling you, it's the same pattern, man. The mainstream world does not want to talk about this story.
That's why we need some Joe Rogan help. We need some Tucker Carlson help. You know, we need some of those guys that, you know, start looking into this. Dr. Phil, whatever, whoever wants to get involved.
Exactly.
Fine. Joe Rogan, listen to me, bud. I'm here. Fellow Joe, we are desperate and we would love to be on your show. We are experts at this and we're really good. Okay, pause. Now, Tucker, listen, dude. you're trying to make a name for yourself, okay? Yep. Here's the deal.
Yep.
This would put you on the map. Forget Putin and being in Russia and doing your thing. Not to mention, I'm a fellow Trinity College graduate. I think we can work together on this. Tucker Carlson and I went to the same college. So hey, listen, a little bit different in terms of when you graduated, but hey, listen, still same education. I was there. I'm an investigator too. Let's work something out. And scene. Thank you so much.
There we go.
We're ready to go now. I'm going to clip that out and beg.
But truly very interesting. Very interesting that, again, it seemed like in those days that the mainstream media did the same thing. They just blew them off basically.
Also, how convoluted is that? Freaking, it's a lawyer.
Unless this happens, and then this, and this, and then less of that. Very convoluted.
There's a Cook County signature here. I couldn't understand what this was, and I don't know if I have. There's the back end of that CBS letter.
Yeah.
Those were the highlights. Those are honestly the ones that I took pictures of. Those were the highlights that the letter from the senator, CBS News, some of the manuscript notes, but nothing about a picture or anything that was hard evidence that would have helped him write his book, which makes me wonder, he did 2 years of research. Where's
the research? Exactly. Yeah, right. And that's what I wonder, because I remember Nash telling me that all his, material, I don't know if he actually used the term research material. But that was definitely my question. He indicated it was all in storage. He had it in a storage bin somewhere. So, you know, I don't know where, you know, what became of that.
Man. Well, we know where he lived, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He lived in Chicago somewhere.
Nash did.
Yes.
Okay.
Did he have children?
Don't know about that, Travis. I know he was married because I actually found him through his wife.
Yeah.
He
was married.
And that Charles Percy was a senator from Illinois.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Great. And he was part of the banking committee, which, you know, makes sense, right?
Yeah. Well, he still got all that Dillinger money that's still out there.
If we could just freaking find it in those walls, it's going to be hard to find anything that he dug. But, hell, we already found a map. What else could we find?
That's right.
But we're moving here. I think it was fun to go to Chicago. I think we'll go again. And, you know, I know we're kind of reiterating what we already said, but any clues that we can get at all, it could, you know, you never know. It feels like, man, we've hit everything. We've known everything. We've seen everything. And yet here we are two episodes in a row seeing things we've never seen before.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I promise you there's more stuff out there. There's hundreds more leads to cover and to look into this. Yes.
I'm hoping anyone listening who had family members of like East Chicago officers during the 30s, Chicago officers, you know, people who worked at the morgue, Cook County, any of that would be awesome if there's any notes that it would be left around.
Right. Or anybody that, you know, was supposedly anybody that's a relative of those bystanders that were outside picking up blood with handkerchiefs at the Biograph Theater.
Yeah. See, it don't to me, Travis, not to put you down here on live podcasting, but like who cares if, you know, the great nephew or the great great grandson of somebody who was an East Chicago police officer, they probably didn't talk about it anyway, PTSD and stuff. But those people that were there that day, that's a story that they passed down from generation to generation.
Yeah, but to jump here on Travis's side on that thing, it was the East Chicago PD, or at least Martin Zarkovich and probably others that were protecting Dillinger.
True, true.
And, man, I'd love to know maybe where the hideouts were because, you know, having been to East Chicago myself, it hasn't changed that much, I don't think, since the 1930s. So probably some of the buildings, apartments, and hideouts where, you know, Zarkovich and company would have been, those are probably still around there, and there's no telling what might be hidden here and there. So
I'd like to know if any stories were passed down that they knew that it was the imposter, you know.
Exactly.
His grandchildren, what they know.
Yeah.
All right, listen, Alice, take it easy on those stories. We're gonna come back here in a couple, you know, keep going with more episodes when we have new stuff. We don't want to waste your all time either. If we feel like we can get an episode out that's important, we want to get it out. So far, we keep finding stuff, so we're gonna keep bringing it to you live, and that's what we're gonna do. So, anything
and
coming
not,
up?
And, well, I was gonna say not to tease because we don't necessarily want to give away what to. You know what we're going to do, but we have some really cool things. We have some cool things in the works that I think folks will find really interesting. So, you know, I don't want to give it away because
something. Give me a taste.
Well, we want to do the leads ourselves. We don't want someone scooping us on, you know, what we're going to do.
That's it. That's exactly right.
That's the FBI answer right there. No comment. Yeah.
And here's the reporter saying, is it an active investigation? Then you can completely let the details come out. So, great job, guys. Really appreciate it. And thanks again. Comment, like, share, subscribe. Please review the podcast. It helps jump us up and gets us in front of more people. When you review it, give us 5 stars. Please don't give us one star. Please don't give us one star. We're 30-0 with 5-star ratings, so it's great. A lot of people like this.
Yeah.
But please positively review it. It really helps us. And then follow us on our socials. And of course, you can always email us at diggingupdillinger@gmail.com. And we're on our link tree. We got everything for you. So merch coming out soon. We'll get it to you. We'll get it to you soon. And until next time, keep digging. Thanks, everybody.
Keep on digging.
The Digging Up Dillinger podcast is produced by Joe Melillo and Grace Hiles. Theme music produced by Eddie Bandis. Follow us on TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. Until next time, keep digging.